Hi, welcome, Sandra.
Hello.
I'm your host, Linda. And today, I'm super thrilled to host my dear friend, Sandra. We were schoolmates at NTU.
Yeah, how long have we known each other for?
I don't know.
We're going to give away how old we are.
About five years. Sorry, that was too loud. I'm not done with my introduction, aren't you?
Okay.
So Sandra is on a mission to bring Singaporean food to London. She runs Old Chang Kee, which is a Singaporean food brand. It's famous for its curry puff and street food. She also started her career really as a journalist with the Straits Times, Singapore National Papers. She even had a column on Sundays, I remember. From journalism to food, it was a big shift. So I wanted her to share her story here. But before we get into like the real story, maybe just something fun. When you woke up this morning, did you manage to take a pause? Was the pause intentional?
No, I didn't manage to take a pause. As you know, I messed up the timings of this podcast and was doing a school run to take my kid to school.
And I apologize. Yes,
as a 44-year-old woman, still can't keep time. But I guess you could say I spent some time with my son, and he told me some funny stories about school. So that is a nice way to start the day as well.
Do you talk daily, like during school runs?
Yeah, we talk a lot. Like it's quite good that he tells us all these funny stories that they get up to at school. And I always tell my husband that I wish like we could be a fly on the wall, because all the nonsense that happens at school is really funny. Like, I just don't remember like what school life is like anymore. So kind of live vicariously through him.
Oh, nice. So here it comes. What was the hardest pause you have ever made?
Okay, so I thought long and hard about this, because I've actually had quite a few changes in my life. Mm-hmm. But what happened was, when I was in my mid-20s, I came to London to do a master's. And I was at that time working at SPH as a journalist. So I took a year out to do my master's. And then when I was here in London, I met my now husband. And we, after the course was finished, we did long distance and everything. But I really, really felt like I hadn't fully experienced life outside the UK, outside Singapore. So I gave up my job as a journalist in Singapore, and I just moved here. At that time, there was a visa that you could apply for that allowed you to come and work here for 2 years without a sponsor. So I applied for that. And then I remember having to tell my family, my parents — I'm the youngest in my family — and my parents were very unhappy with me at the beginning. But I decided to just take this leap. And I wanted to — my thinking at that time was, I wanted to experience what it would be like being a very small, insignificant fish in a big pond. At that time, when I was, even though I was quite young, I had been at SPH for some time, and I had already kind of made a small name for myself covering certain stories. As you said, I had my own column, and I wouldn't say I was like well known, but you know, I did feel like I had achieved something, and like I, you know, occasionally, for example, I would be recognized, and people would say, "Okay, you know, we like reading your stuff," but there was something in me that always felt like that wasn't enough. And I wanted to like kind of experience life outside the bubble that I was in, you know, and we can talk more about that later, but I did feel like I grew up in a bit of a bubble. And so I just took that leap. And then I came to London. I knew some friends from university and from obviously my husband's friends, but I really didn't know that many people. I had to apply for jobs without any experience working here. And I remember I got my first job as a very, very junior account executive in a media company. And it was really, really at the bottom. I had to, you know, my starting salary was like about like 17,000, 18,000 pounds a year, which, you know, is really not a lot. And I had to really humble myself because I would go to work every day. And people, because of being Asian as well, people assume that I was a fresh grad, but I wasn't. I actually like already had 5-6 years worth of experience under my belt. And I had to, so at some point, like even pretend that I was a fresh grad in order to kind of explain what I was doing and why I was in that role. And so that was like kind of a big disruption to my life. It was intentional, but it also wasn't planned because I didn't plan that I would come and meet this guy that I thought like would be worth taking this leap with. But I just felt that it would work, and I just wanted to take this chance. And so that kind of started my journey of like living in the UK. And I've been here for more than like 10, 12 years now. And, you know, like that really changed my life, that big leap. And like, I guess you would say it's a pause, but I just jacked it all in, you know. And if you ask me now, like whether it was the right thing to do, I still don't know, but it certainly was something that I did.
So many things I want to ask you, Sandra. I mean, okay, close friends, and even some things I don't know. So let's start with the first bit that you mentioned, the bubble. Talk to me about the bubble that you felt you were in, and I guess what did you have to let go before you move into, I guess, your next phase, right? Your next season.
Okay, well, I think this is an experience that's personal to me only. And I must say 100% that I was privileged growing up in Singapore. You know, I went to good schools. I had a good education. That meant that I was surrounded by people who all followed the same kind of career trajectory. And, you know, they were sort of always on track to like achieve a certain type of success in life. And, you know, and that continued into my job as well. You know, when I was working as a journalist, yes, I would come across people from all walks of life, but still, like, it was quite kind of, like, I hate to say it, but a bit of an elitist environment, you know, because people who work in the media, like, tend to come from a certain environment and have had exposure to certain things. So when I left, people were like, oh, you know, you can easily go and find a job in journalism because you've got so much experience. But of course, deep down, I knew that I wouldn't be able to, like, there's no way. I mean, journalism is about context and contacts, like who you know and like, you know, your understanding of the world around you. And I had none of that. And I knew that, like, even though, you know, I had quite a lot of experience in Singapore, and I felt like if I had stayed on, I would have probably have progressed through the ranks. You know, the quality of what I was doing was nothing compared to like what it is here, you know. And so I had to let a lot of that go, like, you know, being a somewhat so-and-so, you know. My parents, you know, like my parents were very proud of me. They were like, they thought that I was a so-and-so, even though like, I don't think I was that much of a so-and-so. Like, they would keep all my articles and they would tell their friends, and they're like, oh, your daughter is like, she, you know, her name is in the paper. And then suddenly all of that went away. And like I said, I even had to hide some of that because I was embarrassed to tell people that actually, you know, I have so much more experience than you. You know, I think I related this story to you once where like I was having lunch with my colleagues and there were all these like young, fresh grads out of school. And then talking about like just very young people things. And then eventually I just dropped a bombshell and said, actually, I'm about 5 to 7 years your senior. And I remember like it was just met with shock.
About time. No.
It was very shock because like, also because they couldn't tell because I got Asian face. So they don't know like how old I really am.
Great skin.
No, thank you. Yeah. So I think like, whilst I knew that that was what I wanted the challenge of like, okay, let's go and see what the world outside Singapore is like. It didn't make it that easy as well because I would go home and like cry to Simon, my husband, some nights and go like, what am I doing? You know, like, and blame him too and say, why did I do this? You know, but I just didn't see myself kind of following that same career trajectory that we have sometimes in Singapore, where it's like, you know, you go to university, you have a good job, and then you're like, maybe you settle down and you attain certain things. And I never really felt that that was for me. And I always felt that I wanted to do something different.
I hear you. I wasn't one of them too, as you know.
Yeah.
And then your early days in London, you know, salary is one part of it, but like I hear that sense of just trying to survive and make your own life in London when you first began. Tell me what's going on in your head. Like, how did you do it? It was tough, no?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that we had a flat that we both shared. We all paid, we contributed towards the rent. And it was like, you know, now I will admit it. At that time, I'll never tell my parents this, for example, because they would have been so worried. But it was like behind a post office. And every morning, you get woken up by all the postal vans. And it was down an alleyway, so it wasn't very pleasant. And like, people would come and like, defecate on their door. It was that kind of place. So it was really like going from a nice clean environment in Singapore where, you know, like I said, like I felt quite sheltered and to living in like a pretty rough area in London, for example. So you know, it's just, but we kind of enjoyed being like enjoyed the simple life of like just going to work, coming home, we're like cook because we can't go out to eat, you know, you do spend all your money on rent and like living. And it was a thrill for me at that time because I was living with Simon. It was the first time living abroad on my own, like really independently. And I learned so much like about like just day-to-day things. I in Singapore, I never had to cook because my mom is a very good cook. You just go and dabao food. But I had to learn how to cook. And that actually, I would say, put me on this journey to where I am now. Like the homesickness of like missing Singaporean food, then going to research it and try and cook it yourself. But yeah, it was quite challenging at the beginning. In other economies, like first world economies, you know, people don't lead like very comfortable lifestyles. You know, like the average person does live like, you know, the way that we do live, which is like you get your salary, you pay your mortgage, you know, you pay this and that, and you don't really have a lot of disposable income. But perhaps there's like a bit more to life than money. You know, there are other little joys that we have here that like just go for walks in the park and things like that that don't require us to like spend that much money.
Yeah, such a great reminder. The money piece, the survivor bit to bring the whole like homesickness and hence, you know, now you're getting into this whole food business because you were the journalist helping people to pause and learn, and now you want to bring Singaporean food to London. But like, how did you make this shift and why did you do that beyond the homesickness?
So the homesickness was one. I think I've always said that, like, I looked around and there wasn't a lot of representation of our foods, certainly Singaporean. Over here it's kind of grouped as Singaporean / Malaysian food. You could go to a restaurant in Chinatown, for example, and get Singaporean Malaysian food to a good standard, but it wasn't like mainstream, you know? It wasn't like I could walk and like, it's like my friends would say, I'll go, but you have to come, you have to take me because I don't know what to order. I feel like I'm out of place and things like that. So, and then also at that time, I was working in media agency land and I was working as an account manager and ultimately doing account management is a lot of sales. And I was like selling things that like, I was like, okay, I sold this service and I'm not sure like whether it's like that meaningful. So how do I find this connection back to home as well? And I at that time also, I had sort of in my mind thought like, okay, well, I think by the time I had already gone married, and I thought like, this is my life here for the foreseeable future. So what? How do I find that connection to home? And so I thought, curry puffs, because I had actually been talking about it for years and years and years, telling people, you know, in Asia, there's this thing called curry puff, which is just like a pastry or a pie. And in fact, it's even better because we fill it with curry. And actually, it's two things that people here love. People love pastry, people love pie. And if you love curry, it's all put together. And isn't it great? And then eventually, people were like, why don't you just do it? You know, just stop talking about it and do it. So when you think about curry puffs, you think about Old Chang Kee in Singapore. So I approached them. I did have a connection to them. I didn't know them, but I was able to get introduction. And I said to them, look, you know, I'm an overseas Singaporean. I already live here. But I was forthright. I said, I have no experience in food, but you know, you don't have to post someone here to come and open up a shop. And like quite fortunately, they said, oh, we've always wanted to expand into London. But you're right, we don't have anybody who can go there. And since you're there, like, you know, why don't we talk? So we talked and, you know, we made a deal. And essentially, we have a joint venture with our co-owners to like bring the Old Chang Kee brand to London. And the Old Chang Kee brand in London is very much Old Chang Kee, but it is quite different from what you have in Singapore because it's been adapted and to local, you know, not so much local taste because there's no, you know, that I think that would be doing people a disservice by saying adapt to local taste because actually, you know, Londoners are very cosmopolitan and they can eat all kinds of flavors, but the concept and everything has to speak to the local market more. So essentially that's what I do. I run the UK business as a co-owner. And I trying to spread the word about Singaporean food. Yeah.
How's that going though?
I think again, it's back to being humbled. Singaporean food is not well known. Singapore itself is not that as well known as we sometimes think it is. So growing up in Singapore, you know, you're conditioned to think like, you know, our growth is so phenomenal and we are, you know, Singaporeans are so exportable and our brand is so exportable. But actually to the everyday person, I think they probably don't really know where Singapore is. Maybe not so extreme where they still think we're in China, but they probably couldn't point it out on a map and like what our cultural makeup is. So the fact that we're trying to sell this food that is Singaporean and even Singaporean food in itself cannot be defined because it is a mix of so many different types of cuisines, like does make the education piece quite challenging. But at the same time, it is good because it's a story to tell. So, you know, I have to, you know, do a lot of marketing around like what the story behind a curry puff is. And, you know, we've come up with this story to say like, look, you know, it actually was a British product. Probably during the colonial times, it traveled to Singapore in the form of a pie. And then, you know, we put in our own spices and it turned into a curry puff. You know, and it's completely unverified, but I'm sure it's somewhat true because that's how all food is created, right? Like just a fusion of different things.
Do you see yourself as an ambassador of Singapore or like a food ambassador to some extent?
I think ambassador
there's so much education.
I think ambassador is a strong word, right? Like, you know, I certainly would like to be a voice, but I think there are lots of other ambassadors and but certainly I think like I do carry some weight of having to like represent a Singapore brand and Singapore food. So like when we mess up, and of course sometimes we do as well because, you know, nothing is perfect. I do get comments to say like, oh, you're really letting down the Singapore brand or like the image of Singapore food from other Singaporeans. But I think in terms of letting things go, one of the things that I've had to let go of is that, yes, I started this because I wanted to have a connection to Singapore, but ultimately as a business person, Singapore doesn't play a huge role in this. Because if, like, sometimes my staff tell me, oh, this Singaporean came and complained it's expensive or it's not exactly the same, things like that. Like, I now tell them, like, if we put the whole of Singapore in the UK, we have 5 million out of 65 million people, still wouldn't sustain our business. We have to speak to like the 65 million, not the 5 million. And so I kind of had to be very thick-skinned when it comes to feedback about like the Singaporean-ness of my business. Yeah, because I can't do both. I can't make it speak to the masses, but then also like meet these sometimes kind of impossible standards that we have on ourselves. And I get that it comes from like a good place. So like Singaporeans feel so connected to their food that they like, if they don't have a good experience or they don't think it's worth the money, then they feel like, oh, it's like very insulting to them personally. But I have to let it go because I can't like let that, it does get me down, but I do have to move on and go like, okay, but ultimately like they're not my market, you know, they're not my core market. Of course, they are like those who support us are like a very vocal minority and they are great ambassadors for us. But it's still a numbers game and I have to appeal to everyone, you know, and people who don't even know of Singapore. Maybe they just come and eat the food because they like it. They don't really know like how it's loaded with like this Singaporeanness of it being a brand that's been exported.
Wow. I mean, the journey has been a number of years and I'm sure it's even longer ahead. Has your goal changed? I mean, you first moved to London kind of for love, no? Hi, Simon.
Yeah, just saying. I know.
and then now it became this like huge mission, you know? Like it feels quite daunting, even me just sitting here listening, like from love to like a greater mission to, you know, represent the Singaporean food or even bringing it, advocating it. Like, do you feel like your goals has changed over the years?
Definitely, because I just when I first came, I thought it was like hit the jackpot to just find a job, you know, because I was like, oh, who would want to hire me? You know, like just this unknown. And, you know, of course, there's an element of like we worry about some discrimination as well when they see your name on a CV and they see where you're from. It's like, well, you're not local, right? So like, how would you survive in the local market? And it was true because I was so swaku, like I didn't even know how to make tea for people in an office. I need to learn all like the etiquette of like how to behave in a corporate environment here. How to put things across, how to answer the phone, how to make small talk, you know, like again, how to make tea, how to go to the pub after that, you know, and like, cause as I said, I was quite sheltered in Singapore. Like socially, you know, I wasn't that much of like a social butterfly, I think, you know. I kind of, in my younger days, had to do a lot of studying and didn't get to go out much. And then, but so much of like fitting in is about like understanding like the social mores of like society, any sort of society, like whether you move here or to America or China or wherever. And I like once I kind of settled in, I thought, okay, well, I managed to do that and like take it off my list. But then one of my problems is that I think I always want more. And if you ask my husband, I think he will complain that that's a big problem for me. But it's also, but it's also like kind of what makes me want to challenge myself and always find the next thing to do. So then it became the next thing, and it suddenly became this big next thing. Yeah.
I feel seen today.
yeah, like you. So but I mean, I think let's not like be too lofty about it, because I think ultimately now as a business owner, the responsibility, yes, whilst it's a bonus to be able to like advocate, the basics is I now have 20 people reporting to me, you know, and like they come from everywhere. Like some of them have also like me, like are immigrants, they have moved here and they just want a stable life. Like my responsibility to them is to make sure that they have work and like to make my business sustainable. And like times are very challenging for hospitality here as they are in Singapore. And that's my responsibility, you know, and I guess advocating is good because it is part of like marketing ourselves and hopefully they all feed into each other. But I'm very much like, lest you think that I'm like, I just kind of like go and like, you know, say hi to people and spread the word. It's still quite a lot of like day-to-day like grunt work of running a business.
Yeah, I'm sure the operations and logistics and production is a whole thing. And as an entrepreneur now, like, what is your definition of success compared to like when you were in corporate, you know, and also, you know, now you have your mother too, have your own family. Has your definition of success changed?
Well, I think I still definitely want to prove that I haven't achieved it yet. Prove that like we have like a scalable, sustainable concept. So to me, like that would be my next thing, you know, like we are not entirely scalable yet. So that's what I'm working on. And then, like I said earlier, it's kind of being answerable to the people who work for me. But then as I progress through the journey where, you know, I used to be like in the kitchen, like chopping chicken when somebody call in sick, like pressing the buttons on the till, you know, like being like really, really on the shop floor. But over time, I realized that that wasn't good because that wasn't a good use of my skills. I'm actually terrible at like, you know, what mass producing food, like what do I know about that? Like, or even operations is like not super, super my forte. Like what I need to do is be like working on the business, not in the business. So, you know, over time, I've managed to get to a point where like I can be sitting here with you and talking and not so much like going to like open and close the shop. Okay. And I think that has also given me a type of success because it means that I am able to work on stuff that is a bit more fulfilling, like where I feel like what I put in, I can see the rewards in a bigger way. You know, but the hours that I put in, say, doing a bit of business development or like thinking about something a bit more high level, I can see that pay off in a different way versus like if I were in the shop. I mean, of course, interacting with customers is always going to be there and people do like to see me. But that also means that I got some of my life back. And now that I have a kid, you know, my kid is 8, I can spend a bit more time with him, see more of him. And I have some guilt about that, like, because sometimes you're like, oh, should I be working? Should I really like be spending this time away from the business? So that's a constant tension. But I suppose that also is a level of success that I want to strive for, where I'm working in the right way. That also means that I'm doing quality work on my business, but also having like quality time outside that nurtures me enough to be able to go back to work as well.
What do you fight for now? And what anchors to you? I guess, you know, you talk about a little bit about gear, or should I be doing this? Should I be doing something else? Like, are you fighting for time, energy? What is it?
I'm fighting for time and kind of like peace of mind to have some inspiration. You know, like I think sometimes my days are so varied where like one day I could be doing like pretty high level stuff, like thinking on the strategy and like what we should do next and like trying to look at a new location, for example. And like those are big, big decisions that need to be made. And then the other day, like yesterday, I'm like driving equipment around, you know, like when we do a festival, I am still the only person in the business that has a license and I can trust with driving stuff around. So I drive the van. I drive the van around London, you know, and like whilst the variety of tasks within the job makes it interesting, it also means that I don't have time to like often like just sit and think about things properly and like be inspired about like what needs to happen next, because can be quite bogged down with like a lot of different things. Like, you know, I can see my phone buzzing now about like a fridge, an order, like, you know, some marketing that needs to be signed off, blah, 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 blah. Like, it's quite varied. So yeah, I would like to have some pause for like some proper thinking on like what I can do next.
Are you making any intentional like pauses in your life? Are you thinking about that? Like just daily routine, right?
Well, exercise is one thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, spending time with my son, talking to him about all kinds of nonsense. So I feel like that's quite intentional. I mean, kind of on a very base level, like taking a break, like, you know, next week is half term, so we're going to go away for a while to just take our mind off work. But it's, I wish I could have more time for pausing. Please give me some advice on how, you know.
I'm interviewing so many people. You will get those advice, huh? And, you know, talk about family, you know, we are in our 40s, right? So
yeah.
How has it been navigating, I guess, the different seasons, I would say? I mean, you moved to London when you're in, what, 20s?
Yeah.
When you studied in London when you're 20s, right? And you moved there maybe closer to 30.
Yeah.
So now in your 40s, like, how are you navigating the different life stages?
Obviously, when I first moved here, it was quite a honeymoon period. You know, we then decided to get married, and there was a lot of like time with the two of us. And I didn't have my business yet, and so it was just kind of whilst perhaps, like I said, I wasn't like entirely fulfilled. You know, it was just like quite simple. Now, and then we had our kid, and actually yesterday Facebook threw me up a memory of like a picture of us at a wedding, and actually you commented on it as well to say like, oh, a family photo, and people were like, oh, you guys look so good, blah blah blah. But what they didn't know behind that picture is that, like, somebody even commented to say, you lost so much weight, I lost so much weight, Simon lost so much weight. We were completely destroyed at that time. I think Toby was like 8 months old. We were destroyed, mental health, everything. We were completely destroyed, and that's why we looked so gaunt. So I could fit into size 8 dress, but I, you know, my mind was like a mess, you know? Yeah. So, of course, and that's to do as well with like the way family life is set up here. You don't get a lot of help. We don't have the luxury of having helpers at home or like in-laws or parents who are around. And of course, that's kind of my choice because my parents are in Singapore. But we kind of survived that somehow. It's just like, time just passes and then they grow up, right? So now we're in the season where my son is 8 and he's more of a little person, you know, like Bethany is, and you can talk to them and you can spend more time together as a family, not like a service provider to your child.
I hear you.
Yeah. So because they can provide some service to themselves as well. Yeah.
Right.
And then they go to school and there's a bit more of a routine. But now we are like, now our routine is a lot of activities. You know, he's a lot into football. So we do a lot of, we're going to be football parents. We stand there in the cold, watch him play football, you know, 3 times a week. Okay. And then stuff like that.
And this is outsourced 3 times a week. Not bad.
No, we still go and we're like, you know, he's our only child. So we also like a bit overkill, I suppose. We like go and watch him because, you know, he's cute. But certainly I feel that whilst on the childcare side of things, like things have calmed down because like as kids grow up, things naturally get easier. I mean, I think like people won't believe it. I don't know how you feel about it, but people won't believe it when you tell them when they're in the throat, like in the trenches, you know, like when the kid is like 1 year old. But it just does get easier, like as they grow up, and like you said, like not afraid of like anything you do is gonna kill them, you know. Right? So, but now it's like womanhood is something to consider. Like the your body has been through so much, and now, you know, you need to contend with like other issues, like just, you know, moods up and down, wanting to kill your husband every month, that kind of thing.
Are we talking about the big P or small P?
Big P, yeah. Yeah, small P, big P. Yeah, but I mean, I think your body changes, right? Physiologically. Yeah. Like you just can't imagine, like you didn't, you know, and my everything is just breaking a lot easier, you know, weight gets piled on, cannot be shared. But I think it's just like you say, it's the season of life and kind of finding the right people to talk. Don't talk to a 20-something-year-old about it, lah. Talk to like other 40-year-olds, 40-plus-year-olds about it.
Talk to me.
Yeah.
I mean, has that changed the way you, I guess, take care of yourself? I mean, again, I guess this podcast is also about like how everyone takes care and I guess evolve their life differently, you know, as you know, life situation throws at that. I mean, health included,
Yeah.
You know, so have you, do you feel like you're taking care of yourself differently now?
I really have to make an effort to make sure that I stay active. Because like I think like our parents had us younger, so then we had our kids a bit older. And then suddenly you realize, oh my gosh, like when my son is 12, I might be nearing 50. And then like he's gonna be like, you know, running around and wanting to do this and do that, and like how do I keep up with him? And I really have to make sure that I look after my body and, you know, stay fit. I'm not like an athlete, but like I stay fit and make sure that I can keep up. And then also, I think in our generation, we've done a lot more work on our mental health, for example. And like I've kind of really become able to recognize times when like, I don't feel good, you know, and like try and do some work on that. Because I don't think that we were really taught that when we were growing up, you know, like it wasn't part of like our school curriculum or something. But now in school, I think it's all taught, right? Like my son has like different kind of breaks where like they talk about mindfulness and things like that. I think those certainly health can't run away from that, like actual physical health, but also mental health. I think we really, really have to work on that and like make an effort, not just kind of let it fester.
Throw your question. What do you do when you feel down? Like any advice for people who might be listening? Like how do you take care of yourself? What would you do? Any advice?
I go for a walk or a run. Yeah. I mean, the endorphins thing is true, right? It's just true. You feel it too, right? You like to run too. Yeah. Mm. And I think that helps a lot. I must admit that I sometimes eat my feelings. So,
yeah, foodie. So,
food is in my DNA. Maybe that's not so much a good coping mechanism, but you know, it's like it does perk me up.
you eat and walk at the same time.
Yeah,
that works too.
Curry puff is a very mobile kind of food.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's why it's called a street food.
Yeah, portable.
Looking ahead, what does the next decade look like?
I would like to keep working on my business. Okay. But I may also try and diversify a little bit. I don't think that I could go back to working in an office job, a corporate environment. I think I learned quite early on that it wasn't for me. So, you know, whilst I have a responsibility to keep this business running, like I'm also like always looking out for like other things to do. So, you know, that might happen. I mean, my husband also has his own business. So he also runs a food manufacturing business. So maybe my distraction would be I couldn't dabble in that as well. But I think I'll always be looking for something to do. I get that from my dad. He's like he never was an entrepreneur, but he always like had all these side projects to do. He's retired now. So, but I think that's that. Now, from a professional point of view, I think it'll always be like looking for the next thing. The next thing. From a family point of view, I kind of close shop. So I will have one child. And I just want to make sure that like he has the best childhood that he can get. You know, like obviously, like, do you know, I will be open and say like it's not that I didn't want another one. I just it never happened. And then so but now that we have one, like I don't want to apologize for like pouring everything that I have into him, you know. So So poor guy, probably be like, oh, super helicoptered by his parents. But but yeah, just want to make sure that he grows into a decent human being. That's the main thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't really, then maybe it doesn't need to be like top in class or whatever, just a decent human being.
I want to bring back to your first point about the bubble. Like what did you, I guess, glean from your early childhood or even time spent in Singapore in this little bubble? How does that change or maybe impact the way you parent now? I guess you're 8 years old.
I think we didn't have, at the time that we were in school, and I know that it's all been reviewed now, we didn't have a very well-rounded education. I think a lot of it was very academically driven. Mm-hmm. And I always say that, like, when I was 12, that was the most stressful year of my life. 12. Because of the other big P, the PSLE. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I don't think I was very well-developed socially. You know, when we met at university, I think, like, I probably only had only known the opposite sex for like 2 years, like from JC, right? You know, I was not well developed socially. And I felt that in the environment that I was in, it was quite black and white, like what was successful and what wasn't, you know? And something about that never really sat well with me. You know, I kind of like, did the job of like making sure that I had good grades and all that, but I was never like top, but I just did the job as I was expected to. And I worry sometimes that, like, you know, people can be left behind because they don't fit a certain mold in Singapore. So I don't want that for my son. I just want him to like be more all-rounded, you know, be like, be socially adaptable, understand, and also like have some concern for like issues that don't directly impact him. So have an understanding of like, you know, what goes on in the world, have empathy for like people who are not, maybe not in your immediate social circle. And I don't think that I had an opportunity for that growing up in Singapore because I was quite sheltered. And it, you know, it was only much later in life when like I met people who like, you know, didn't have the same kind of, came from the same background that I came from. And then it was, I just felt like, oh, I was so, like I said, so swaku and like, you know, had such a narrow view of the world. And sometimes I worry that like, you know, because we have it very easy in Singapore, like it's very comfortable, that we don't really need to like worry about like social issues and things like that. And but I would like him to have that kind of social conscience. And so that's where that's what I'm trying to do. Whether I succeed or not is another thing. You know, everything is a conflict, a tension. Like perhaps that's like quite a Western point of view, right? To go like, oh, just let them find their own path. Then like sometimes I'm like, oh, how come you got 37 out of 40 for this test? Like, what exactly did you get wrong there?
So Singaporean, Sandra.
I know. So it's like, you know, I kind of live in two worlds, I feel. Yeah, I live in two worlds.
That's maybe you, right?
Maybe
your experiences and your upbringing,
maybe,
you can't
maybe
change overnight.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't want people to think that like I've forsaken everything that's Singaporean about me just because I live somewhere else now. You know, I think one of the good things about Singaporean is like having a lot of tools to live everywhere, you know, and survive everywhere, because that's how we're trained. You know, we are multicultural and like cosmopolitan, but then it's hard to, you know, I've never given up that side of me. Yeah, certainly, you know, in the pursuit of food, no, but I am just trying to absorb other things as well that I feel like were a bit lacking for me when I grew up.
Sandra, we've talked a lot. Thank you so much.
You're
for
very
sharing.
Welcome. This was a pause in itself too, by the way.
I realize. Thank you for giving me the 45 minutes.
No, cause, I mean, like, how often do I get to like reflect on stuff in my life? Yeah.
That's right. I'm looking for more stories. Who else should I interview?
Oh, I should interview you.
Okay. Is that your answer?
On top of that, let me think. Maybe like somebody who's just like done something that is not traditionally seen as like progressing any part of their life. Just doing nothing. Just like, you know, gone to travel the world or something, you know, and it really like bucked that trend of like, oh, I, you know, because it's like, sometimes we have to like spin the pauses, right? It's like, oh, I've taken this pause because like, but it's going to like feed me in some way, like professionally, especially professionally. But maybe there are people out there who have just gone like, I'm just going to do nothing and like find out like what that did for them.
Yeah. Okay. I will. Okay, I like that. It's not difficult to find, I'm sure, but feel free to send some names to me. My final thing is, I guess, any last words from you?
I guess, like what you said, it's a journey. Like, it's like I'm in no way complete or finished. And this might not be the final, where my final destination. Like I said, there's like more and more. Like I was just thinking about like my young niece, for example, and like straight out of uni, they just like, you know, stressing about like what your first job's gonna be, you know, and like that's like such a big decision in your life at that time, right? But then you don't know that like in 10 years time, actually you just want to do something else, right?
Yeah, and for some.
Yeah, you might want to do something else. So like, just maybe to the young people out there, like, you know, don't be so like fixated on like what your first step will be, because it's not going to be like the last step. It will be part of a journey for you to like do many different things, perhaps.
Yeah, great example for that.
Well, we shall see. Talk to me in 5-10 years time, maybe I will tell you. Just stick to the try and test it.
Thank you, Sandra. It has been lovely. I mean, a lot of conversation I had so far has been quite heavy, so I like that our conversation is a bit lighter. So, thank you. Like, okay. Entertaining too,
Oh, okay. Good comic relief.
Okay. Thank you, Sandra.
You are very welcome.